Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm going to report on the physics with the neutrino factory complex. Despite the principles, the performance mentioned, other that this is called complex because there's other things you can do with it, and it's also a first step to muon colliders. And this part, which is R&D in Europe and elsewhere, will be covered by the next speaker after the coffee break. So you have the coffee break to discuss the physics, and then you have a description of what people are actually doing to go in this direction. Recently, there was a yellow report published called Eckfassering Studies of a European Neutrino Factory Complex. It's from the beginning of this year. It has several hundreds of authors in it, and also several US-based studies at the same time. I'm not sure I need to extend very much on this. We know now that there are three families of active neutrinos. We have established solar neutrino oscillations and atmospheric neutrino oscillations. We know that at the atmospheric frequency, the electron neutrino oscillations are small. And we have a reasonably consistent picture of all of these facts within a three-family oscillation scenario. And of course, we know that with three families, we will be in a position to reach leptonic CP and T violations. And that will be a very exciting program. And we can expect this to last for a little while, until we have done the same kind of tests of unitarity that the B physics people are doing these days. It will take some time. In fact, CP violation in quartz was discovered in 1964, and as you know, there is a number of B physics experiments still going on, and for a little while. And we in neutrinos have not even discovered leptonic CP violation yet. So you may take this as a pessimistic view or an optimistic view, depending on the way you sit. But it's certainly an incentive to go and investigate very powerful and very precise means of investigation of this phenomena. This is a neutrino factory layout. I'm sure you have seen several times. You start with the highest possible power of protons. Power means pion production. And so essentially the number which is relevant here is 4 megawatts. It was agreed not to talk about higher powers until we actually knew how to do this one. In the case of CERN, we start with the LINAC, which is a machine with a very long duty cycle. So the protons need to be accumulated and even bunched in very tiny bunches of 3 nanoseconds lengths. Then they are dumped onto a target, which will take this 4 megawatts. Now, Alessandra will discuss how you can make 4 megawatts, which is equivalent to 4,000 vacuum cleaners, into a little piece of metal. 10 to the 16 protons per second at 2 GeV will produce about 0.1 pion per proton, and the collection system, which is here with the phase rotation and ionization cooling, should be able to keep 10% of those, so that you end up with, if you have 10 to 21, if you have 10 to the 16th protons per second, you end up with 10 to the 14th muon per second, or for a 10 to 7 seconds year, 10 to the 21 muons per year. The beam, which was here the size of a watermelon, at the end of this is the size of a ping pong ball, maybe, or even smaller, and can be accelerated all the way to possibly 50 GeV or at least 20 GeV and stored in a storage ring. With 50 GeV muons and 2,000 meter circumference, the muons will go around 200 times before they decay. If you design your storage ring properly, you will have 1, 2, and 3 directions in which you have a very intense beam of neutrinos. You cannot have less than 2 directions. You could imagine having more, but we figured that the best was to have 3, and a triangle like this. Muons decay with a nu e and an anti-nu mu, if it's a mu plus, or charge conjugate. When these will interact, they'll produce mu pluses, when these will interact, they will produce electrons, but if they have oscillated into nu mu, they will produce a mu minus, and the signal will be a wrong side muon. This is what's called the golden measurement. I think the term was coined by J.J. Gomez, Pilar Hernandez and family. And mu minus goes to nu bar E, and this oscillates into nu bar mu and gives a mu plus. This is wrong sign in the sense that this is the opposite sign as the muons in the ring. And this is the other example which I had shown in the previous slide. To observe wrong side muons, it is well known that what you want is hyper CDHS or super Minos or something which is a large magnetic detector. This is, was studied in an article by Anselmo Savera et al. It is believed that this is a fairly straightforward technology. However, when you talk about 40 kilotons of iron, there may be problems that surface, but the studies have been made assuming this type of detector. Studies have been made also assuming a liquid argon detector. You need a magnetic field in order to be able to tell the charge of the muon, so that assumes that your liquid argon is complemented by a spectrometer, or that the whole liquid argon volume is magnetized, which is not something completely trivial at this moment in time. With the kind of muon rates that I showed, this would be the event rates. The charge current mu is, in absence of oscillations, you would have these numbers. At 732 kilometers, which I believe is the CERN to Gran Sasso beam line, and 3,500 kilometers, which is possibly Spitsbergen or the Canary Islands. Now, if you look at the nu mu signal, that would be the wrong side muons. For a value of sine square theta 1/3 of 0.01, you'd get 10 to the 5 events and 10 to the 5 events. You notice these are the same numbers. I let you think about it during the coffee break. For comparison, in the J-Park phase 1 experiment, you would have 40 events at this particular value of sine squared theta 1/3, just to give you a feeling of the difference in orders of magnitude that we're discussing. This is an example of an experiment made, simulated with liquid argon, where the events are classified into six different classes: right side muons, wrong side muons, electrons or positrons you don't assume to be able to tell the charge, tau leptons decaying into muons, with identified with missing transverse momentum, negative tau leptons, and no leptons. Of course, you get these distributions of energy for each of these events, times two for the case where the mu pluses are stored and mu minuses are stored. A few years back, you could see plots like this, which describe the sensitivity of various experiments. This was done by Manfred and his group. And this was neutrino factory. And what you could see is a very small bar for systematic errors, and then a large bar for degeneracies. And of course, people since then have been actively working to try to understand how all these degeneracies could be solved, pointing out that this was only for golden channel, one sign, and one distance, which of course had been noted that one should do more than this. But already was emphasized the very low systematic errors in neutrino factories. Well, where does that come from? It comes from the fact that the flux is from muon decay is extremely well known. And the aim, as it was discussed in this yellow report, is to be able to achieve a knowledge of 10 minus 3 on the absolute flux. Why does one know this? Well, first thing is, you notice if you make these plots, you realize that the fluxes are extremely sensitive on muon polarization. One of the first thing you want to do is make a triangle ring so that the muons precess, and when you average over the 200 turns or so, the polarization averages out. There's another very nice thing you do by this polarization precession is that you calibrate the energy and the energy spread so that the absolute energy of the ring of the muons is known to an exquisite precision. The angular divergence is important, but it can be measured, for instance, by putting a little bit of gas in one of the straight sections of the storage ring and looking at the angular distribution of chunk of light. And so with these elements, I should add the following, that the absolute flux should be measurable from the muon current. But since these are high energy muons, you can see the energy extends to 50 GeV, you can have an absolute calibration by a known process, which is nu mu e minus to mu minus nu e in the near detector. So it's very similar to Baba scattering in E plus E minus experiments. You can have an absolute measurement of your flux directly from a measured process. The second reason why the systematic errors are very small is that the backgrounds are very small. When you look at the wrong side muon, this typically comes from a neutral current or charge current in which a hadron decays in the hadronic shower. Now, if you do this calculation for iron, which is very dense, you end up with a little bit of a momentum cut, decreasing the background by a very large factor. CP asymmetries. Well, what you want to do is compare the rate of wrong side muons when you run with mu pluses in the ring to the rate of wrong side muons when you run with mu minuses in the ring. Now this, if I make a simplification, this probability depends on the angle theta 1, 3 and theta 2, 3 and on this modified angles because of matter effects. Matter effects, of course, introduce a big difference between u e nu mu and nu bar e nu mu bar. This is exemplified in this graph, which shows you the ratio of nu e bar to nu mu bar versus nu e to nu mu oscillations as a function of distance. The matter effect separates completely the two cases where you have the mass difference between the near doublet and the third one is in the wrong direction, contrary to your intuition, say, or in the right direction. These two things are very separated if the distance is anything above 1,000 kilometers. In comparison, the CP violation is a small effect. It's the difference between these black lines. So one has to subtract the matter effect. However, one believes that this can be done with a uncertainty of the order of 2%. Thank you. Also, the spectrum of matter effect and CP violation is different. And so one can extract separately the matter effect from the CP violation by looking at bins in energy. This plot here shows the, by method of subtraction, the number of standard deviations one gets in various bins of energy in the spectrum or by integrating the spectrum for a neutrino factory with 50 GeV muons. You see typically 20 to 25 standard deviations for maximum CP violation. This is the exercise that was done by the liquid argon proponents to extract separately, knowing the density or not knowing the density, the value of the phase delta, and you can see that when you project to the delta axis, it's actually not very different. Now, to solve degeneracies, there's a very interesting method, which is to realize that high energy neutrinos at the neutrino factory allow observation of the nu e to nu tau channel. This can be, as I explained, done by wrong side muons with missing energy and transverse momentum, or by observing directly the towers with an opera-like detector. This can be done at 732 in Grand Sasso or 3,000 kilometers. Suppose you had only the observation of the wrong side muons. In the theta 1,3 delta plane, you would see a sinusoid curve, which corresponds to the various possibilities. In fact, these sinusoids have been drawn here, and the only reason why they don't cover the whole distance because in different beams of energy you get a slightly different effect. If you use towels, the effect is reversed. This is also an interesting coffee break discussion, why that is. And if you use the two channels together, you see the ambiguity is largely removed. Now, these degeneracies have been studied in great detail by Rigolin, Donini, and Meloni, in particular, in a recent paper. And they try to understand all the ambiguities, the intrinsic ambiguity, the sign ambiguity, which has to do with the sign of the splitting of masses, the octant ambiguity, which is whether theta 2,3 is plus 45 degrees or minus 45 degrees, and the mix of these ambiguities when the two signs are reversed. And these are various curves. We show you what is the line of constant signal for a given energy at a given distance. If you change the energy, you get a different line. If you change the distance, you get another different line. And if you combine all this, you will end up eliminating the wrong solution. You do it much better even if you use the tau channel. And of course, if you use the mu pluses run and mu minuses run. So their conclusion is that the neutrino factory has many handles on the problem of ambiguities. Muon sign, the gold channel, the silver channel, the different baselines, and the Binningen energy. And all this you can do because you're working at high energy. Rigolin said that in principle, most of the clones could be eliminated for theta 1,3 all the way down to 1 degree. There's the octant clone, which will require a dedicated analysis. So he believes he's almost there, but not totally quite there. So this will get us this far. This is the present limit from Shaw, Minos, and Sinyengias should go down to 4 or 5 degrees about. Beta disappearance experiments will get you to a few 10 minus 2. The J-part should get us down to 2.5 degrees, or a fraction of 10 minus 2, 6 and minus 3. You will hear later SPL beta beams and super beam proposals which get us down to 10 minus 3. Neutrino factory is way down to 0.1 degree. This is a comparison of the phase space in delta and theta 1,3, where the various experiment can go. Super beam is up there, the beta beam is there. The combination of the two is very nice, you will see, because of the possibility to test time reversal. But it's very nice, but the neutrino factory is still better. Okay. Quickly to mention that there are other physics opportunities at the neutrino factory complex. Some of them are related just to high intensity, and there were workshops recently discussing this. As soon as you have an SPL and an accumulator, you have a very great variety of time structures for the protons, either almost continuous in the accumulator, bunched at the output of the SPL, or very bunched at the output of the accumulator. This is very good to do all kinds of low-energy muon experiments, rare muon decays, etc. Of course, this is of great interest for the nuclear people. If you have to produce radioactive nuclei, if you have both radioactive nuclei and muon beams, you can do muonic atoms with unstable nuclei and study their structure by the capture lines. And also, of course, if a sufficient fraction of protons can be X-rayed to high energy, you can do high intensity hadron experiments, such as the search for this pi0nu KDK. In parallel to the long baseline neutrino experiments, you have short baseline neutrino experiments where you have huge fluxes right at the output of the straight sections. If I send this beam to the Canary Islands and I send this beam to Gran Sasso, then this beam could be used for a very near detector station with special optics. The fluxes are huge. These are number of events, nu mu n to mu x per GeV per 100 gram per square centimeter, and you are talking 20 million per year here for a beam of 50 centimeters radius. So the chorus, your old neutrino detector, which had several meters transverse size, would become the inner target of the COMPASS experiment, if you will. And so that allows many things to be done, in particular very high precision neutrino electron scattering with precisions comparable to the best of the left measurements, but at a very different chi-square. Of course, a revisitation of the deep inelastic scattering measurements by comparing neutral currents to charge currents. And other interesting things, such as with such a small targets, you could imagine having polarized protons. And since neutrinos are entirely polarized, you could have interesting polarized lepton polarized proton measurements. And of course, you could measure the final states. And I'm not sure I want to do that experiment, but the measurements of these structure functions, polarized structure functions in the nucleus, would become very powerful. Final, last but not least, the neutrino factory is the first step to a Higgs collider. As you well know, the Higgs mass is 115 GeV. Maybe. And so if I upgrade my neutrino factory, 50 GeV neutrino factory, to 57.5 GeV, with a tiny little ring and a lot more cooling, one can imagine doing a muon collider and producing muons in the S-channel. That's absolutely wonderful textbook experiment if you can never do it. Even more interesting, I think, would be the production of these mu-mu to big H and big A, which are the predicted by the supersymmetric models, or any Higgs doublet models, actually. And typically, these are two heavy spin zero particles, which have very similar masses. They are separated by 1 or 2 or 3 GeV. And one is CP odd and one is CP even. And so they decay into completely different things and right next to each other. Usually, they are completely mixed up in all the other E plus E minus collider or Hadron collider experiments. But here they could be separated down to very, very small mass differences. And this would be a place of excellence for, to study CP violation in the Higgs sector. Why don't we go and build a neutrino factory right away, after all I said? Well, people have estimated the cost, and it comes out to about $2 billion, plus a detector of about $300 million. And that seems a little bit frightening, just like that. Probably with the cost I saw today for the new MEF axis, this cost here could be reduced by a factor of two. So there's a lot to do to improve this figure. First of all, to ascertain all the technologies which are involved. This is one reason to do R&D. And the second is to hope to cut the cost in half. So I think my time is up. I showed you a few neutrino factory plans in the world. So my conclusions. The neutrino factory remains the most powerful tool imagined so far to study neutrino oscillations. And great part of this is because it is the only way to produce high energy nu e, nu mu, and nu e, nu tau transitions. The complex offers many other possibilities. It's a step towards muon colliders. As you will see from the next talk, there are good hopes to reduce the cost significantly. There is an international and several regional collaborations that undertake R&D on components and R&D experiments. The community is enthusiastic and motivated whenever it can get money. There are several opportunities in Europe itself. We have the high-intensity proton driver studies at CERN. There's a target experiment which is proposed at CERN. There's collective development at Orsay in collaboration with CERN. And there's the muon cooling experiment at Rutherford Lab. All these things are being done these days towards the neutrino factory. Thank you. Thank you.
questions?
Can you tell us a little bit about the time structure of the neutrino beam? Is there any, what's the duty factor? Is there any RF structure present in the neutrino beam? Will it be DC? What time structure would you have?
Okay. If you go back to the structure which is up there, you see that you will have a bunch of muons coming every time the muons go around the ring. Now the time structure of these bunches depends precisely on how they are accelerated and how the bunching is made at this point. Depending on the scenario, the same scenario would have only one bunch of muons per bunch of protons. So you have typically a train of 12 bunches of muons going around, and then 20 milliseconds later, another set of 12 bunches of muons. So tak, 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 tak. Which makes 600 bunches per second, times the number of turns they go around. So the duty cycle is not very good, but not very small, but you get high energy neutrinos and they are not confused with anything else.
Any other questions? Back here.
In order to measure leptonic CP violation, it would be much cleaner to study T violation in neutrino oscillations. But this would require detection of electroneutrinos. Do you think it is doable with neutrino factors?
Okay, this was studied. And the idea was the following. If you go back to the spectrum, you realize that you can have a with one polarization of muons, you can have 100% nuis or 0% nuis. You can extinct completely the signals of the nui beam in the ring. If that were true, you could study the appearance of nu mu nui very nicely, instead of nui nu mu. So that's time reversal symmetry. The problem is it's not possible to get 100% polarized muons and to have a lot of them. And so the loss of statistics that you do by doing this is too much to be practical. The other possibility is to have a liquid argon detector which can see your electrons and to have it magnetized. That's a big R&D project. I think it's been shown that you can drift the electrons with a magnetic field of about half a Tesla. The feasibility of an object of 50 kilotons which has a magnetic field in it is not at all demonstrated. But yes, this would be wonderful.
Any other questions? One more.
So it's clear that the neutrino factory is the ultimate tool to study all the parameters needed in the mixing matrix, theta 1-3, CP, and the sign of delta time, below an effect of, let's say, 1%. So what should be the effort in order to get Randy going quickly, in order to be ready as soon as possible to build such a machine? Also, as you say, using such a machine will also define what kind of R&D which have to be done on the detector also.
Yes. Well, that's a very interesting question. Thank you. I think you should collect as many of your friends as you can. And go to, I think it's Stavros in France. And in Italy, this would be Commissione Due or Cinque. And in in Germany, it would be somewhere else, etc. And say, we would like to participate in this experiment. There's a muon cooling experiment, there's a target experiment, there's this and there's that. I think it's at this point in time, it should be a bottom-up approach. In fact, this is how it's been going on so far. Now, at some moment, this will become top-down, but I think we first have to make ourselves vulnerable and say, well, we are willing to risk on this. Was that the answer you wanted?
Probably. Okay, are there any other questions? Let's thank the speaker again.